The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for August is the new Growing in Faith Bible. It's written for children, grandchildren, and godchildren, ages 8 through 10. The Growing in Faith Bible contains more than 100 Bible stories with beautiful, engaging pictures. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. The Growing in Faith Bible, The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for August. You know, every so often, those who write our dictionaries have to update the lexicon. They have to go back and add words that have come into common usage. Sometimes those words are trivial. They're just slang, the trendy kind of stuff. And sometimes they have staying power and have real serious implications behind them. If they haven't added it already, I'm sure that they're planning to add the nuns as a new entry in the dictionary. What would the dictionary say of the nuns? It would say that this is a group of people who, when asked about their religious affiliation, specific religious affiliation, answer either none or none of the above. Thus, the nuns. And they've been a lot in the news because they're a growing group in the United States in particular. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly joins us to talk about media coverage of mainline progressive Christianity and the nuns. Terry is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he is founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Are you the only person in the media who has written about this connection between old mainline liberal Protestantism's decline and the rise of the nuns?
There have been some people who have pointed it out. I think the name that I should mention first, and I quote him all the time, some people may think that I'm either playing some sort of bizarre drinking game where I, you know, get to take a shot of Cherry Coke every time I mention his name. The scholar and pollster John C. Green of the University of Akron, who for 25 years or so has been on the front lines of putting some facts, some muscle into discussions of religion and politics in American life. And he did this while being kind of a Midwestern liberal United Methodist working down in the Bible Belt in South Carolina when he was teaching at Furman University. He's now back up in the Midwest at the University of Akron, and he is a go-to source for reporters. And one of the reasons I like this guy is he's really such a straight shooter, but has a real gift for summing up the implications of things that you look at in a spreadsheet, you know, when one of these massive data dump polls comes out, like the General Social Survey or one of the Pew Forum polls. I think I've told this story before, but I have to start with it again. Back when Barack Obama was a senator from Illinois and was just beginning to whisper that he might run for the presidency, right about that time, we had a meeting with some international journalists at the Washington Journalism Center on Capitol Hill, back when I led that program. And John came and spoke to us on the subject of what's ahead in religion in American life. Looking back on it, it was very clear that he already was looking at some of the early runs of the material that would lead to the Pew Research Center's blockbuster report on the rise of the religiously unaffiliated, the group that is everyone, because that won't go in a headline very well, those that everyone unofficially calls the nuns, which, by the way, is not a great term because it implies that these people have no religion at all. What it means is that they have no articulated, confessed link to a religious tradition. They may be hanging out in the spirituality and self-growth section at the local bookstore or on various websites to their heart's content. They may have connected Gaia worship with environmentalism for all we know, but they're not a part of any articulated religious tradition. So religiously unaffiliated is the long word here. The long term nuns fits much better in a one column headline. So I bring up John again because all the way back before the Obama administrations, John drew this long line on the board in our classroom and said, let me show you what's happening with American religion right now. And he said, what we have over here is about 20 to 23% of the American public, some people put the number as low as 18%, who are consistently striving to practice a religious tradition in their daily life. These are not just people who go to church on Sunday. These are the committed, articulate believers in a host of different religious traditions. He said, now, the big story is all the way over on the other side, which is where atheists are up slightly, agnostics are up slightly, but we're beginning to watch a rapid rise of this group called the religiously unaffiliated. He was using that term at that point. And he made several prophetic statements. He said, what's happening is the middle of the American religious landscape that we've had in place for so long. The middle is vanishing. That's where the losses are coming from. And as such, this fits well with the fact that the world of the Seven Sisters, the world of liberal mainline Protestantism, in descending order by size, that would be the United Methodist Church, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, the Presbyterian Church USA, the Episcopal Church, the American Baptist Churches USA, the United Church of Christ, and the Christian Church, Disciples of Christ. Those are what sociologists refer to as the Seven Sisters of mainline Protestantism. He was talking about how they are rapidly aging. They are shedding members. They're getting older and older and older. They have low birth rates. Their theology doesn't lead them naturally to evangelism or church growth. And he would say this doesn't mean that everybody in those churches are liberal, but you would tend to have pretty wide divides between the theology of their seminaries and their pulpits and the people who are in the pews. And he said those groups are going to continue to lose members. For those who are not keeping score, the Seven Sisters since 1960 have lost, depending on the denomination, somewhere between 30 and 50% of their members. Todd, you've heard me argue that it's the decline and the rapid shrinking of the mainline churches in the middle that helped create the gap in American social religion that the evangelicals exploded into in the 70s and 80s and 90s. For the press, that's the rise of the religious right. If you look at it in pollster language, that was an era when evangelicals went from, had this kind of a surge. You know, it was the big megachurch era, and the evangelicals were hot there for a while. And they rose up about, they gained about 6 or 7% in some polls in terms of their percentage of the American population. They've since declined back down kind of to where they were before or slightly above where they were before. We can get into that in a minute. But the big picture here is the middle is vanishing. Traditional forms of religion are staying about the same. And now we have this fascinating and skyrocketing part of the American population that doesn't claim any connection to a religious tradition, and this is especially prevalent among the young people. And the evidence is that, unlike previous generations, these young people are not reverting to church attendance when they get married and begin to have children, which, of course, as everyone knows, the millennials and Gen X are getting married and have later and having fewer children and a lot of other things. Didn't I just give you a summary of like everything we've talked about for 5 years?
What I'm wondering here is the disappearance of the middle. Someone listening to us says that's not only happening in churches, it's happening in politics too.
Well, and that's where you get into the fact that to the press, all of this is important to the degree to which it fits Donald Trump. and those famous red and blue maps that show which zip codes or which area codes or which counties went for George Bush versus Al Gore, and we've seen them over and over ever since. The whole red and blue America, which some humorous person out there on the left took the leap, and I would say accurately described the situation where they took the red-blue map, they created the middle is an independent nation called Jesus Land, and then the East Coast and the West Coast, Canada, and a little sliver of the upper Midwest was like the Confederated States of Reason and Tolerance. And to a lot of people in the press, that's the story. Now, what's interesting is that you can see this in some of the poll data, and that's where things get really scary. I wrote this column this week about some very interesting work that's being done by a man who is kind of frankly on the political or religious left. He is a mainline Protestant, but he grew up Southern Baptist. So we had a lot to talk about. We had a lot of background there. And working through an organization that he co-founded called Religion in Public. And whatever you think of mainline Protestantism or the left or whatever, you really do need to bookmark this website, the Religion in Public weblog. And his name is Ryan P. Berg, B-U-R-G-E. He's a professor of political science, both at Eastern Illinois University, but he also is the pastor or co-pastor of an American Baptist congregation in Illinois. So interesting guy. And while he and I, if we talked for another hour like we did this week, would disagree on a lot of things, but he is doing extremely sharp work in the fine details of these massive polls that come out of like election poll results and above all, the mother lode of all information, which is the general social survey that comes out. Combine that with a good working knowledge of John C. Green and the Pew numbers, he's a fascinating guy to talk to. So it was great to get to talk to a candid man on the left who was spotting a lot of the same things that I've been spotting. And by the way, I emailed John C. Green and reminded him of some of his predictions back at that time and said, have your views on this subject changed at all? And he wrote back and said, no, they haven't changed a bit. You know, the mainline Protestant continue to have the challenges that they have as they continue their rapid demographic decline. And he also repeated that amazing point when you look at this from a political perspective. He said, if you look at the modern Democratic Party, the largest identifiable religious group in the Democratic Party is now agnostic, atheist, religiously unaffiliated. Especially if you combine that with the part of the mainline Protestant lay people who are politically liberal or their clergy or whatever. If you put this world of kind of unaffiliated religion plus liberal religion, you put them together, that's now the largest identifiable group in the Democratic Party today. It's a group that two sociologists in New York City for a number of years have been referring to as the anti-evangelical voters. The primary thing that unites them is their social and cultural liberalism, primarily on issues related to the sexual revolution, and that means abortion, gay rights, et cetera, which then affects how you view the First Amendment, and then all that affects the Supreme Court, and we are off to the races at that point.
You have an intriguing quote from Berg. Mainline is a tradition that has declined rapidly over 40 years, while nuns have risen just as dramatically. It seems that a lot of kids who were raised mainline left in the mainline left religion entirely. Their parents stayed, but that means mainlines are going to face an edge of a cliff soon. And it made me wonder, Terry, are the nuns the children of the mainline denominations?
Well, an awful lot of them are. It would be impossible to think otherwise. But at the same time, I would point out, and he is perfectly valid to point out, that that surge in evangelical numbers, a lot of that has vanished. So kind of a lot of mushy, suburban, self-help group evangelicalism. Maybe we could call that celebrity evangelicalism even. That's not doing very well right now either. I mean, the Southern Baptists are having trouble hanging on to their young people. But the slight declines and the struggles of Baptist evangelicals, Assemblies of God, etc., I mean, you can see that in the numbers, that they have declined a little bit. That is an apple compared to the orange of the ongoing collapse of the mainline Protestant world. So I think the main thing is to say people who were just kind of sociologically sort of religious, we would call them the Christmas Easter Christians to some degree, and I guess every church has them. The world of highly committed religious practice is down slightly, but it's not going away and it's not changing. John Green once told me, and told me again recently, he can't see the active segment, truly active, committed segment of religious life in America. He can't see it going below 20, 21, 22, which is about where it is now, which is not huge. A lot of Americans would like to fantasize that we've got more committed religious believers than that. But he doesn't see the traditionalist going away. What's happening is a soaking away of the young from that world of weddings, funerals. We go to church two or three times a year. We're sort of Methodist. We're sort of Baptist. And in certain mega churches in the suburb, maybe we're sort of evangelical. There was an interesting quote from him that sums it all up. I checked this quote with him, and he apologized for the little Seinfeldian grammar in the middle of it. Things got a little too Seinfeld, was how he put it. People are either being intentionally and intensely religious, like really active evangelicals or conservative Catholics or yada yada, or they're leaving the more moderate churches that we've always seen as holding down the middle of religious life in this country. We've ended up with two trends that appear to be related. We're losing moderation in the political space in American life, and we're losing moderation in the religious space as well. That's a humdinger of a quote coming from this guy who has crunched a tremendous amount of data to reach that position. And that's very, very similar to what John C. Green has been saying through the last decade as well.
I'm stunned because we've talked, as you have said, we have talked about this so much, gone over it backward and forward. And to have someone say, look, America's moving left, as you point out in your column, on many moral issues, and yet these mainline denominations are not growing. That is a writ large political / religious question that I'm stunned the mainstream media is not getting onto. It is red meat for them.
Well, it's to me, what I argued, the way I set this column up, was I noted we've all been celebrating two big statistics for 5 to 8 years now, one of which is the Donald Trump, 81% of white evangelicals, everything in politics can be blamed on white evangelicals. We have that figure. Then we have the amazing figures about the rise of the nuns. What I would argue is what he did is he connected the dots and said the third trend is exactly what John Green drew on that board that day years ago. Look at the middle vanishing. The Republican Party, its most dominant grassroots activist, the people we've got to get out to the vote. If we are going to win, we have to have a massive white evangelical turnout, and we have to win, as John Green likes to say, we have to win the Catholics who go to Mass once a week instead of once a month. another great John Green quote from years ago. That's the reality for Republicans. But the reality for Democrats is they've got to stay loyal to the religiously unaffiliated, atheist, agnostic, and liberal mainline Protestant kind of Unitarian vote, the liberal Episcopalian vote. They've got to keep those people happy. So look at it from the Republican Party. How do you float some sort of compromise on, say, abortion or whatever? This is not a happy age for the old classic country club mainline Protestant Republican, is it? Yet at the same time, if you're a Democrat and you wanted to do some sort of compromise on abortion that said, well, maybe we should have abortion policies that more resemble Germany or France or the rest of the Western world in some way, how do you float that compromise, which is actually what most Democrats, especially African Americans and Latinos, whatever, what most of them would want, some sort of centrist position on abortion, maybe no legal abortion outside the first trimester, for example, what a lot of these laws are that are being passed in many states. How would you float that, knowing that to win in the primaries, you've got to appeal to that 30%, that 25 to 30% of the nation now, that to one degree or another is religiously affiliated, atheist, agnostic, or liberal, mainline Protestant. And the main thing that unites them is their hatred of traditional moral theology and moral cultural stances from traditional religious groups. Do you see how both parties, to some degree right now, are locked in? I could make one comment here about media in the sense that this is why so many people are absolutely amazed that Fox News remains so devoutly libertarian conservative instead of culturally conservative, in the sense that they're kind of like the New York Republican libertarians, and they're wild and crazy, and some of them like Trump and some of them don't. But how much religion news do you see accurately reported on Fox? And how has the moral life of Fox been in their New York bureau for like the last 3 years? Something that, well, I guess it would be fine for the Southern Baptists who are cheering for Trump, and it would be agony for the Southern Baptists who are agonized about Trump. You can't take the religious and moral issues out of this, and not just because those are the issues that keep showing up in front of the court, the Supreme Court as well. The demographics, the numbers in the surveys are pointing to this division as well. So like I said, a lot of people out there, if you're listening, click. When I get a version of this up on Get Religion this weekend, go to this website, Religion in Public. You may not agree with their interpretation of the numbers all the time. There may be stuff there that make you happy or make you sad, but you're going to see a lot of very interesting numbers, hardcore stuff coming out of these surveys. And you're going to find it both fascinating and distressing.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. On the other side of the break, we're going to talk about the fact that political preference appears to now be baked into religious traditions. Stay tuned.
For a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The substitute organist service has been a great blessing for our worship life here at Christ the King Lutheran in Riverview, Florida.
Pastor Kevin Yoakum on the substitute organist service.
Now our organ plays rich liturgical music every single Sunday, and it's very affordable. You pick the hymns, you pick the liturgies. It's very simple. Just know when to push play.
You can find out more about the substitute organist service at churchmusicsolutions.com. churchmusicsolutions.com.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
We're discussing media coverage of mainline progressive Christianity and the nuns with syndicated columnist Terry Mattingly. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Terry is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, you wanted to talk about a Washington Post story about Maine's aging crisis. What's the story?
This is a case where it's another side effect of this demographic thing. It's another thing that we're seeing coming out of the numbers in these surveys. And it was a story about the fact that the state of Maine has reached a crisis stage in terms of having enough people to take care of the rising numbers of elderly in their state. The elderly, as the baby boom generation, the biggest generation ever, I think until the millennials, as the baby boomers begin to hit into the front edge of being elderly, the Post created a map of what they called the super aged states in America. States where you have way higher numbers of elderly compared to the rest of the population, which is another way of saying, as one figure in the story so bluntly puts it, he said, I used to be able to hire young people in the summer to help me work down here on my fishing wharfs down here in Maine, you know, with the lobsters and everything else. He said, but I don't have any kids applying for these jobs anymore because there aren't any kids. There aren't any kids around. Now, the minute I tell you that there are lots and lots of elderly and that these states in New England and in a couple of other parts of the nation have super low rates of children, do you begin to hear moral and religious implications?
You know, I'm just thinking kind of the obvious fact that while Christians only slightly, and religious people, devout religious people, only slightly as on the average break the record of the zero replacement fertility, the devout Christians, if I'm not mistaken in the latest numbers, put the rest of them to shame, so to speak, in terms of their fertility. They're not at mere replacement levels.
So what I did was I took this Post story and then I put up a link to a state-by-state set of statistics from the Pew Research Center about religious life and, in particular, worship attendance. And I thought, this will be fun. I wonder if there's any overlap. Well, how much overlap do you think there was between the states with the lowest worship attendance in America and the states that are now facing the super-aged crisis? It's about a 70 to 80% overlap. They're almost identical, which gets us back to a quote. Now, this is a quote I have printed many times, and it's long. But I want to read this for a second. This was from a very prophetic Weekly Standard article a number of years ago. And maybe I won't read the whole thing, but it's from an article called America's One-Child Policy. Listen to this. In a world where childbearing has no practical benefit, people have babies because they want to, either for self-fulfillment or as a moral imperative. Moral imperative, of course, is a euphemism for religious compulsion. There are stark differences in fertility between secular and religious people. And it goes into a discussion of aspirational fertility and how many children Americans think they should have. Then it ends with, but on this question, there are two Americas today, a secular population that wants small families or no family at all, and a religious population that wants larger families. Religious affiliation is part of the story, but the real difference comes with church attendance. Among people who seldom or never go to church, 66% say 0, 1, or 2 children is the ideal, and only 25% view 3 or more as ideal. Among those who go to church monthly, 3 or 4 number up edges up to 29. But among those who attend church every week, 41% say 3 or more children is ideal, where only 47% think that a smaller family is preferable. About a 50-50 split among the multiple church. He ends up by making this thesis statement, which, if you stop and think about everything we've discussed today, tell me this doesn't have something to do with John C. Green and his chart on that wall long ago. When you meet couples today with 3 or more children, chances are they are making a theological statement. Well, when you go to churches with lots of converts, is that a theological statement? When you go to churches with booming nurseries, is that a theological statement? So many of these demographic questions seem to me to be linked in to this vanishing middle and linked into the mainline decline, linked into the fact that the more intensely religious people just don't seem to want to go away. As John C. Green said, he can't see that going below 21-22% of the population. If you look at it within Judaism, it's why Orthodox Judaism is now rising to become the dominant form of Judaism in America, not the more liberal reason, forms of Judaism that are in demographic decline. There's no unifying theory to all of this, except the practical end result is the vanishing middle. The vanishing middle. That's what I keep coming away from in all of these stories, and gosh, they're connected in so many ways.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you, and talk with you again next week.
Glad to do so.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll respond to your email and the Issues Etc. comment line, and we'll play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. We got 4 soundbites for you ready to go. One from Rebecca Curtis on the objectivity of truth, goodness, and beauty. Another for Denise Schick on what children of transgender parents need. Dr. Robert Spencer chimes in on what President Trump should know about ISIS, and Dr. Tom Egger gives us his thoughts on the phrase from the book of Hebrews, by faith, Sarah conceived. Soundbite of the week tomorrow on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Do you want a church with a rockin' band and a sermon series to help you live a better life? It's not here. Bethany Evangelical Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights offers authentic, historic Christianity to a world awash in fads and entertainment, and offers forgiveness of sins to people overwhelmed with guilt and shame. Join us Sundays at 9:30 on Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights, Illinois, to receive the life-giving gifts of God with us. Find out more online at bethanylcms.org.